The reading this morning is from a book called The Spirituality of Imperfection. And I chose this reading before I knew the title of last week's sermon. So apparently this is the other theme for the month. This reading is a brief story about a rabbi who lived 300 or 400 years ago, who actually didn't write a thing down, but there are a whole series of stories that have circulated for all of that time about things that he did and conversations that he had. And this is a story about someone who went to visit him. "For a whole year, I felt like going to my master, Rabbi Bunim, and asking him what to do. But every time I entered his house, I felt I wasn't man enough. Once, though, when I was walking across a field and weeping, I knew I must run to the rabbi without delay. And he asked, 'Why are you weeping?' And I answered, 'I am, after all, alive in this world, a being created with all the senses and all of the limbs. But I do not know what it is I was created for and what I am to do in this world.' 'Ah, little fool,' he replied, 'that is the same question that I have carried with me for my whole life. Come and eat the evening meal with me today.'" "I am, after all, alive in this world, a being created with all the senses and all the limbs, and I do not know what it is I was created for and what I am good for in this world. 'That is the same question I have carried around with me all my life. You will come and eat the evening meal with me today.' The student arrives for dinner, knocking at the door of the rabbi's small wooden house. A child answers the door and says, 'Who are you?' And then a woman comes to the door and says, 'Welcome, come in, come in. I'll take your coat.' And she ruffles the hair on the head of the quizzical child. The dinner table is set with candles and mismatched plates and bowls. There are 5 place settings. The student is confused. He had imagined a meal with just the rabbi, a meal with answers and insight, thin broth and esoteric wisdom, 2 loaves of bread cool on the sideboard. The room is warm and smells of dinner, and the student's stomach growls. 'Sorry, dear, he's in the study,' says the woman as she turns the student gently around the corner and goes to the stove where something is bubbling. The student steps into the study at the other end of the kitchen. The room is strewn with books and poorly lit. The rabbi is leaning back in his chair, feet up on a table, and a child is under the table, also reading. Her finger follows along to keep her place in each line. She pauses to sound out some of the words. The rabbi and the child don't notice the student for a moment, so he watches them read and looks around the room at the books and the papers and the heavy curtains over the windows. The child notices the stranger in the doorway and taps her father's hand. 'Ah, we didn't hear you come in. You are an observant one.' The rabbi gets up from his chair, pulls another chair from the corner, and motions the student into it. The girl comes out from under the table and perches behind her father's chair, watching the student with obvious interest. The student does not know what to say. The rabbi is relaxed and quiet. Finally, the rabbi says, 'It's a strange thing not knowing why we are here. And yet we eat, we make friends, we have children, we serve our God, we cast about, suffering with every slight and confusion. We could just as easily sit in silence all day and do nothing. The child hops down, goes into the kitchen, and comes back with a bowl of crackers, eating as she comes through the door. She puts the bowl down on the table, scoops up a handful, and returns to her perch. The student fights tears. None of this is what the student expected. And yet, it's easy to sit in this chair, surrounded by books, the smell of dinner from the kitchen, the rabbi so happy to be sitting there in the cluttered study with his daughter and student. The woman puts her head in the door. "Come eat, you three," she smiles. At the table, the children light the candles and say a blessing. The rabbi and his wife chant together. And then the bowls are filled and the bread is passed and they eat. There are sweet potato pancakes and cucumbers with mint. The soup is vinegary and thick with lumps of soft potato. The bread is still warm and the butter melts into it. It is easy to forget the weeping that brought the student to the table. Except that the younger child says, "Why are you here?" through a mouth full of soup. And his sister nudges him, so he turns to her and says, "Well, why?" And the little boy starts to make a game out of guessing why the student is here. "Did you come to play backgammon? Are you going to fix that old table in the shed? Do you know how to dance? Did you bring me anything?" And of course, he never really leaves the student a chance to answer. The rabbi pours more wine. The girl gets out her violin and plays a few tunes. The rabbi listens with his eyes closed, and the little boy sits on his lap looking at the student. The girl is good. The tunes stutter occasionally, but she gets the feeling out of the instrument. And the little boy nudges his father to say, "Look," because the student is crying again. The girl keeps playing until she is done with what she knows by heart. Her mother hugs her and takes the violin and plays one short piece. The instrument is too small for her, really. She smiles as she plays the song, "Da da inu, da da inu." She hands the glowing wood to the girl to put away, brings coffee and bread pudding to the table. "We never get dessert like this," says the little boy. "You should come every dinner." The rabbi and his student go back to the study. His wife and the children clean up the dinner. And the student asks the rabbi, "What about the question of why we are here?" "Indeed," says the rabbi. "I do not know. But I am always glad to share a meal with a soul who carries that question with them all the time. If we only got the question, that would be enough. If we only got the consolation of each other's company, that would be enough. If we only learned to love this ragged life anyway, that would be enough." That's the old Passover song and prayer, Dayenu. It is enough. To eat together is enough. There might be more of an answer to this question of our existence. And sharing a meal is an answer. It is a way to meet the tremendum of this life. You may have heard this past week that they have decided that they can measure the echo of the Big Bang. I, of course, got preoccupied with, if it's an echo, what's it bouncing off of? So I'm sure that echo is an imprecise word to try to translate what they've measured. They can detect somehow and quantify the ripples of the universe that are left over from that moment when almost nothing became everything. And we are riding those waves right now, bobbing along on the ancient ripples of the Big Bang. Apparently, it's also called the Great Inflation. I think trying to put math into words just doesn't always go well. And it's so mind-blowing that really we could just sit still and be quiet, and that would be about it. That might be enough of a response. But mostly we are curious and restless, and like the student going to the rabbi, we want something more. So we eat together, and you are telling those stories this morning, making meals, gathering here in our hall to eat and sing together. Another famous rabbi, Jesus, also fed his followers, his students. It was important to him that they eat. He was a worker of miracles, and he was a social radical, and he fed people. He preached the gospel of eating together as a spiritual practice, as a consolation for the soul, as a sign of respect for your fellow humans. When I was a girl, I was present for a couple of Catholic communion services, but I was always left in the pew when the rest of the group that I was with went up to get communion because I was clearly not Catholic. And I was fascinated by this little bit of a meal that happened in the middle of church. So although I was never really part of it, I understood that there was something special about sharing bread and wine. And then in college, I participated regularly in Jewish Shabbat services. And if you have ever been a part of a Shabbat, you know that the community gets together and breaks bread together and drinks wine together as a sign of a shared story. They physically take nourishment, but it is also a symbol that they are together, that they share that other larger hunger for what is beyond bread. That we hunger for answers to why and how and who are you? I learned the blessings for the bread and the wine in Hebrew. And I can't remember exactly what they mean now, but I still have the spirit of them. Gratitude in the sense of joining, joining with the divine, joining with each other, joining with an ancient story. And as an outsider to both of these traditions, I was struck by how similar the two rituals are, although neither tradition mentioned the fact that they're basically doing the same thing. And then I had communion during a pagan service in San Francisco. It was a service that was conducted in a large circle in a big empty room in the downtown UU church. We had sung and welcomed spring, as a matter of fact, and a baby had taken her first steps in the middle of the service. It had been good. And we ended by passing bread around and feeding each other and saying, "May you never hunger." And then we passed water around and said, "Drink deeply." So every religious experience that I have encountered does the same ritual. It has the same physical elements, the same longing, longing for strength in this world to sustain us to meet the world beyond this one. So maybe every meal is a communion, if we let it be. So maybe this is one of the places that we as Unitarian Universalists could say, I am very religious, and so I pause when I eat to notice where my food comes from. I pause to be grateful for the earth and the farmers, all the people who got this food to me. And if you can stand it, maybe once a week, to think about the world beyond our earth that's part of the meal that you're eating. But that's a lot to do at one meal, so you could just stay on the earth. And you don't have to chant in an ancient language to have the meal be a moment for spiritual awareness. You can pause for 10 seconds and notice the gift of life that is in front of you when you eat. Notice that every bite connects us to a story much larger than ourselves, of sun and soil, all of the wisdom of growing food. We eat out of other people's hands every time we eat. And if that is not a profound and holy story, I don't know any. So I invite you into this as a practice, to say a few words, to notice your eating in a new way. I have offered you a few words to take home with you, and you'll notice that most of them are serious, and this is to be done with seriousness, but not the kind of seriousness that precludes joy and laughter. So you may notice, if you read the meal blessings tucked into your order of service, that some of them invite that laughter too. It's part of being here with these questions we cannot answer.